So this sermon took a little different shape yesterday after I was reminded about a parade that happened up in Dayton. Yesterday, Dayton played host, if we want to put it that way, to a parade put on by the Ku Klux Klan. Honestly, I can't imagine it. I simply cannot understand how that group is still around. I can't do it. When I read about all the violence and when I read about the violence and uncontrolled intimidation that went on during the Civil Rights Movement, especially, it seems like a whole different world to me. It can't be this world, I think. And yet, here we are. Yesterday. Dayton, of all places. That's unbelievable. One of my friend's daughters, who's 7 years old, she was driving downtown. Well, the mom was. The daughter was in the car. Driving downtown Dayton before the parade yesterday, and they saw there were a bunch of signs up, a bunch of preparations. Downtown had pretty much shut down, and they didn't realize it. And there were a bunch of signs protesting the parade. So the question inevitably came out, and what is this? So her mom told her what was going on. And she got scared. She got scared. And she said, "Do they hate me too? Do they hate me too?" So she's white, but she has a friend named Kelsey. A good friend named Kelsey. And she wondered, do they hate me too because I'm friends with Kelsey? My friend's daughter, she couldn't figure out where hate begins and where it ends. I'm kind of just wondering if it's ever going to end to begin with. Is it? After this, John tells us in chapter 5, after this, there was a festival of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, there is a pool called in Hebrew Bethzatha, which has 5 porticos or porches. In these lay many invalids, blind, lame, and the paralyzed. One man was there who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" The sick man answered, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I am making my way, someone else steps in before me." Jesus said to him, "Stand up, take your mat, walk." At once the man was made well, and he took up his mat began to walk. Jesus, we see, walks into Jerusalem, and it's not the first time. He sees a man lying there on his mat. How many times do you think Jesus saw him lying there? How many times? John tells us that Jesus knew him, that he had been in that place for 38 years. 38 years without a friend to help him down into the pool. 38 years of waiting and hoping to be healed. 38 years. What could possibly have kept him hoping? What could possibly have kept him going? What could have kept him coming back to that pool? 38 years. Today's sermon is about those 38 years. What is it that keeps us believing that God can heal us and our world when everything we see around us seems to speak the opposite? Hatred, hurt, violence. Is it going to end? What is it that keeps us believing all this talk about the gospel when the KKK can still draw people and run rallies and do parades from one coast to the other? This group, by the way, is moving from city to city to city. So why do we stay faithful when we don't always have the results to back it up? For me, maybe it's because I've led a pretty cushy life so far. But I remember the first time I asked a question like this. I didn't ask it about my own life or my own walk of faith. I asked it about the lives and the walks of faith of people who I thought whose struggles seemed a lot deeper. A lot deeper, a lot realer than mine. I'll tell you about one of them. Her name is Fannie Lou Hamer. If you don't know about Miss Hamer, one day she took a test. That's kind of how her later story begins. One day she takes a test. It was August 1962. She had gone down to the courthouse in Sunflower County, Mississippi. She went to register to vote, and when she got to the courthouse, she was asked one question, just one. It was a random question. It happened to be about the state constitution, and it was really obscure. Today, we'd probably even call it downright unfair. What they asked Hamer was about the nature of what are called de facto laws. And she told them that she knew about as much about de facto laws as a horse knows about Christmas Day. Those are her words. Miss Hamer, of course, didn't pass that test. But I should tell you, neither did any of the 17 other people who went to the courthouse that day with her. What they did pass was a bunch of people sitting outside in the back of their trucks holding rifles. They passed them as they were circling the courthouse over and over and over again, holding those rifles, waiting for Miss Hamer and her friends to come out. Just waiting. Fannie Lou Hamer was a singer. When she sang, you could feel your confidence growing. She'd stir up this new sense of rightness and righteousness within you. She'd take your beaten down will and soul and she'd pump it full of life. And whatever fears of violence or brutality came circling around you, she'd drive them away with a voice that it said boomed. It said her voice boomed. A year or so after failing that first literacy test at Sunflower County Courthouse, Fannie went to a rally in Greenwood, Mississippi. Greenwood. And in the middle of all of these threats and the tension and the heightened emotions of that rally, she stood up. She started singing, real low and slow. Wade in the water, wade in the water, children, wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water. As she went on, she threw in these lines that were both laments and promises tied together. You can hinder me there, you can hinder me here. God's gonna trouble the water. I'm looking at you, Julie, you're supposed to help. The water, but the Lord in heaven will hear my prayer, right? God's gonna trouble the water. There was just something about Fannie Lou Hamer. When she sang, she would dig down deep into the promises of her God. She would wade into that water, even when it was troubled, boiling. And there she'd find something. She'd find something to keep her and the hundreds, the thousands of folks with her going. She'd find something to keep them walking along, trudging forward, wading deeper and deeper in, sure that something, someone, something holy, someone righteous was going to come. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, John tells us in the book of Revelation, and it was bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. And on either side of the river is the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, producing its fruit each month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Nothing accursed will be found there anymore, but the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it, and his servants will worship him, and they will see his face. Last week we said that our resurrection from the dead is first and foremost the time when we begin to fully share in the life of God. What we experience in resurrection is Jesus' life-giving presence overflowing into us. This is what we talked about last week. We said death would be no more. Mourning and crying and pain would not be anymore. Why? Because God, we said, God is pouring out his life for us. John called Jesus in Revelation 21 the spring of the water of life. Here in the next chapter, he calls him the river of the water of life. Jesus is a river that fuels a tree that brings healing to the nations. That's the picture of God we get in the Bible. That's the picture of heaven we get. The resurrected one pours out his life for us. This image, this picture of a river of life, of healing, of forgiveness, of promise. Whichever way you want to put it, it's an image that seems seared into our collective subconscious. Just think about all the songs we have that focus on the river. As we go down to the river to pray, singing about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Or, shall we gather at the river? By the way, that song is basically written off of this chapter in Revelation. If you're not buying it, even Bruce Springsteen gets in on the action. You were wondering when Springsteen would come in, right? Here it is. We'll see if I can do it today. We'd go down to the river, and into the river we'd dive. Oh, down to the river, we'd ride. I've been listening to that song all week. I just don't got it right now. We'd go down to the river, and into the river we'd dive. Oh, down to the river, we'd ride. Garth Brooks can't escape it either, by the way. You know a dream is like a river, ever changing as it flows. A couple years ago, even Eminem, y'all know Eminem, right? Eminem's a rapper. He's a rapper. He teamed up with Ed Sheeran, who's this English pop slash hip hop artist, all right? All right, and they put together a song, and you don't want to play it for your kids, but they put together a song, you can probably guess what they called it, River, all right? I'll just give you the chorus. I've been a liar, been a thief, been a lover, been a cheat. All my sins need holy water, feel it washing over me. Cool? All right, don't ask me to karaoke. There's something about the river. There's something about the river that makes us think of healing. It makes us think of forgiveness and promise, hope, salvation. And yet the results aren't always there to show for it. In fact, if we're being honest, it feels like they're rarely there. That's what we hear behind Fannie Lou Hamer's Wade in the Water. There's this kind of hesitancy to the river. There's a delayed gratification, we might say. In the middle of the fight for civil rights, Fannie Lou Hamer had no trouble pairing lament with promise, but it was the lament that cut deeper. It was the lament that rang truest, because the lament was the present. We see the same thing in Springsteen. For him, too, the river is a symbol of hope. It's a symbol of promise, but it's a fragile promise. When he sings the chorus for the last time in the song, it's different. He changes it up. That sends me down to the river, he says, though I know the river is dry. That sends me down to the river tonight. What do we make of the river when the river runs dry? What is it that keeps us believing that God can heal us in our world when all we see around us is that same violence and the same pain that we've seen for years and decades and centuries and millennia? Why do we stay faithful when we don't always have the results to show for it? Why? When Jesus walks up to that man at the pool and sees him lying there, he asks him a question. Do you want to be made well? Do you want to be made well? What a ridiculous question. Of course he wants to be made well. Why else would he have been lying on that same mat for 38 years if he didn't want to be made well? But Jesus isn't really interested in the man's desire, his desire to be healed. I think Jesus is more interested in the man, how the man expects to be healed. You see, the pool of Bethesda was believed to have healing powers. You would step in right after it got stirred up, and you'd be healed. But this man can never get into the pool in time. He had nobody to help him in. He didn't have a friend in the world. When Jesus asks him if he wants to be healed, when Jesus asks him if he wants to be made well, the guy assumes Jesus is offering to help him in, down deep into the pool. But instead, what Jesus does is he heals him right then and there. Stand up, take your mat, walk. It's a command that only God can make. And it continues a point that John, the author of the gospel, has insisted on from the very beginning of his book when he describes Jesus as Emmanuel, God with us, God with us. John is telling us that true life and true healing only come in relationship with God. They only come in friendship with God. You see, what this man needed was a friend to help him to healing. What he got was the Lord of life. Last week, we pushed back against the temptation to see heaven and the resurrection as only things that we consume, as things we can possess or obtain. But in both Revelation 21 and 22, the picture of heaven that we get is not one of consumption or what we can get our hands on. Instead, it's one of relationship. It's one of friendship, even. John tells us that we will see the face of God. We will see the face of God. We will look into his face and know the source of all life like we know a friend, because that's exactly who God is. That's what true life is. It's friendship with the God of life, the one who wades beside us in the waters. That's what kept Fannie Lou Hamer believing. What keeps faithful folk like us today faithful, even while the KKK still marched through Dayton, is not just the promise that one day that won't happen. It's the presence of friendship, God's friendship. Fannie Lou Hamer wasn't just trusting some promise she found in a book. She was trusting a friend who she found walking right beside her when the armed men came circling around. That gave her strength to keep going on. That friend gave her the confidence to keep pushing on, to wade deeper, deeper into that water, because he was going to be right there with her. "Do you want to be healed?" he asks. "Yes, I want to be healed." "Then come wade in the water. Wade in the water." Friends, the strength of our faith is not in words or logic or argument or sheer willpower. It's in the person of Jesus Christ himself. It's in our experience of the resurrected God, the one who opens up his life for us, who invites us in. It's in friendship. True friendship with the God of the universe, who asks us not just if we want to be cured, but if we want healing, real healing of body and mind and soul. God has done everything needed for us to become friends with him. And he continues to do everything needed for us to become better and better friends with him. That's what the Christian life is all about. That's why we come week after week. That's why we gather together. That's why we continue to learn, not to get more stuff in our heads, but to become better friends. It's about deepening this friendship with God. It's about answering that question, "Do you want to be healed?" by wading deeper into the water, by going down deep. Will you join me as we wade in the water?